Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
On this episode of Narcissist Apocalypse Q&A, we talk with Sybil Cumin about play therapy, the effects of witnessing abuse, protective parenting, teaching kids problem solving, and intuition. Welcome to Narcissist Apocalypse Q&A, everyone. I am Brandon Chadwick, and with me today, we have Sybil Cumin. How are you?
I am well. I'm ready to answer your questions.
Well, before we answer questions for everyone today, everyone, Sybil Cumin is a licensed professional counselor and play therapist specializing in working with victims and survivors of narcissistic abuse and domestic violence and coercive control, including the youngest witnesses. She owns a small group therapy practice in Colorado, and after witnessing the constant ethical issues survivors experience in the family court system trying to protect their children, she also started Rising Beyond Power and Control to support survivors dealing with post-separation abuse. She also has a podcast called the Rising Beyond Podcast to offer support to a larger audience. And you're active in legislation in, you know, Colorado, changes in Colorado to what's going on in the family court system and everything. So a big, big thank you to for being here today. And as I said, you are a play therapist.
Yes.
So let's just discuss first here, what is play therapy?
Yeah, so therapy with little people looks really different than therapy with adults. And so we use the language of children, which is play, in order for them to process through traumatic situations or to learn skills. And really the belief is that children actually know what they need to heal. Children heal all the time and process things all the time, and they do it through play. And so they need a safe space. They need a safe person. And it is helpful to have some specific toys around so that they can process what they've been through. So we don't sit across from each other, like me in my therapist chair and them on the couch, talking about whatever's going on in their world. We do it through play.
So before I get into, you know, how kids are impacted by coercive control, when we talk about play and play therapy, when it comes to just parenting as a whole and encouraging your children to have an active, I guess, imagination or way of playing, for parents just as a whole, how do you encourage that and how do you go about that to encourage play as a whole? And what does that do for a child, whether there has to be, therapy involved at all in helping, you know, maneuver through what is going on, or just them as a person and how they can grow or be a better parent through play?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Thank you for asking this question. I'm so excited. Because imagination is really a protective factor for your kids. And so what we see is when kids come in and they really struggle with imaginative play, they have a hard time solving problems in their world. So an example, I was doing supervision with an intern at my practice who's learning how to do therapy. And my son was there and he was about 3 and a half. And we're talking about her kid. And my kid's trying to sword fight with me on the side, because that's what we do, right? If you're a mom, you are multitasking. And so as we're sword fighting, I said like, oh, but I have a force field and your sword cannot puncture it. And for a minute, he sat back and was, you know, thought, and he's like, but my sword is covered in diamonds, which are the sharpest thing, and they can pierce your force field. So even just in that play, he was solving a problem in play. And what was interesting is the intern I was working with, her child really was struggling with every form of problem solving in his world. And so when we reflected, it was like, wow, he doesn't play imaginatively. And so it really was like, how do we build that imaginary skill? Because it's tiring. Right? Like think about doing the imaginary play with your kids. Wouldn't it be easier to just like have them do a puzzle? Right? I have two boys that are really active that we didn't do puzzles that were so bored. So it really is like getting on the floor with them, having a lot of, it doesn't have to be a lot of expensive toys, but having things that they can use, right? Pots and pans, toilet paper tubes or paper towel tubes, different things that they can used to play, because allowing them that imaginative play is going to help them learn how to solve their problems outside of play too.
And when it comes to video games, are video games helpful in this way?
You know what? I have a unpopular opinion. Sometimes they are helpful. So if you think about Minecraft, okay, I've got an 8-year-old and Minecraft is so cool. It's still the coolest thing ever. And they get to build whatever they want to build. However, there are some games that are so very structured and it is so limiting about what they can do. Those ones aren't going to be helpful. But if they're the games where they get to create their cities, they get to create their worlds, like their kind of problem solving and imaginary skills, you know, and a lot of therapists are like, no, you should not allow kids to play video games. And in some capacities, they can actually be helpful.
Well, thank you for that. And now I'll get back on the topic of, you know, domestic violence, domestic abuse, coercive control, narcissistic abuse. So you're dealing with kids. How are they impacted by all of this with your experience?
They are hugely impacted in so many ways, right? The research shows that children who have witnessed domestic violence, physical violence, they score very similarly on the PTSD scales, the post-traumatic stress disorder scales, as veterans who have been in war. So they are scoring really high in post-traumatic stress disorder scales. The ones that maybe haven't witnessed physical abuse, they are still experiencing symptoms because they are living in a home where they're walking on eggshells and everyone is walking on eggshells. And the reason that they are experiencing such intense effects or impacts is because as you're growing up, your neural network, so the neurons and things in your brain, grow a specific way based on your situation. So if they are constantly having to protect themselves and they feel unsafe a lot of the time, whether it's physical or not, their neural network is going to grow in a fashion to constantly be protecting. So a lot of these kids that are constantly protecting are in that fight or flight feel. So you might see higher levels of aggression. You might see kids that actually like go AWOL, like they run, they leave. Then you're going to have some of the kids that maybe aren't in that fight or flight because that didn't work to protect them. And their neural networks are set up to go more into the freeze. So these are the kids that go internal. They are really quiet. They're almost forgotten a lot because they're behaving well, but they are as fearful, if not more fearful, than the fight or flight kids that are acting out more. So this is how their neural networks have been, and it's grown that way. So they're going to work in their world with the belief that their world isn't safe because their caregiver, right? Like as a little baby, their survival is based on their caregiver. And if their caregiver is being harmed, that is a negative impact to their survival. And so it seems really extreme that I'm saying that, but this is why our kids are so impacted by having any relationship abuse within the family.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
And what are the things that you can do as a protective, safe parent when trying to help your child who's been impacted by domestic violence and coercive control?
Yeah, there's so many things that can be done. I would say number one is you, as a protective parent, need to take care of yourself. You need to get whatever therapy that you can get, whatever support groups. You need to be okay. Because it is your role then to help regulate your child. So number one is do what you need to do to be as okay as you can be, which that's actually a pretty big ask heading out of this.
Yeah, because if you're the parent who's been dealing with abuse and has been abused, you might not be fully emotionally regulated. You could get triggered by a lot of different things. How are you able to like maneuver in and out of being a safe and protective parent where you're not trying to give your child what's kind of flying off of you, you know? How do you take space when you're now most likely a single parent and you have to take space, but who's there to take care of your kids while you need to take that? You know, it's like it's a run around in a circle, especially if you don't have a lot of money to get extra help or someone to look after your kids and things like that.
Yes, it absolutely is. And so your brain has also developed that same neural network because our brains are really malleable. So as you are trying to protect yourself from your ex-partner, your nervous system is set up for protection too. So very often you are in fight or flight or you are in freeze. And so some of the things that you can do is first just be really aware of when that's coming up for you. So if your child literally mimics exactly what your ex-partner would say, you're going to be triggered. That's horrible. And that is so hard. And so it is really just being aware that yes, there are times where I'm going to be extremely triggered. And in taking a break, it may mean 3 to 5 minutes. It may not be like, hey, I'm going to get like the whole weekend to myself. It may be these really short pockets of time where you are going to step aside. You're going to notice what's going on for you. Everyone talks about mindfulness. It's not just about, you know, Zen yoga on the beach. It's just meaning like what's going on for me in this moment. And how can I become more regulated, which doesn't mean calm. Regulated basically means you're okay. Like, you know, you're going to be okay no matter the emotion you're experiencing. That's what kind of more regulated is. So being able to take those short breaks, take some deep breaths, do some, you know, sometimes you need to move your body. If you're in fight, right? If you're in fight or flight, that's all about movement. So you may need to move around. You may need to do jumping jacks. I have one client that does push-ups to get some of that kinesthetic fight or flight energy out of your body. And then you need to come back because you're a single parent and you need to make sure your kid's safe and all of that. And so then it really is on attunement. So really focusing on how can I attune with my child, which basically means I'm noticing what state they're in. So you might need to get down on their level. So eye to eye. So you're going to squat down or sit on the floor. If they're talking really fast or they're talking really loud, you can start to do some co-regulation by slowing down how you're talking and taking some deep breaths and modeling that quieter space, because they will start to feed off of you in that way. So I'm sure, I mean, I have boys. I am not a perfect parent at all. Get triggered, turn into a five-year-old, totally do it. And as I'm like getting riled up, my kids are getting more riled up, because that is actually how we're co-not regulating, right? Like we're dysregulating together. And so when you can start to slow things down, they will mirror to some extent what you're doing, and it will help them calm down as well.
So I guess this is moving into the next question, which I guess part of it is what you kind of answered, is how do I connect with my child when they are being indoctrinated against me?
Yeah, so I get this a lot because unfortunately it is a part of coercive control. If your child's going back and forth, especially if you don't have as much time with them as your abusive ex-partner does, right? They don't have you anymore. So they are going to try and control you any way they can and harm you any way they can. That's through your kids. And so this does happen. And so really focusing, I think that, again, if the larger view is really focusing on contrast, because you want to give your child what they are not going to get at the other home, because they are going to feel the difference. So they might see the difference, but it's actually more an internal nervous system feel. So the things you're going to do that your ex is not going to do is you're going to be consistent and do the things you say you're going to do. You're not going to have false promises. You're going to offer love that is unconditional. Their other parent is going to only offer love with strings attached. So they get love when they get an A in school or when they are the star player of the baseball team. But if they do poorly at that game, they're not going to get love. So you are offering unconditional love for them. That doesn't mean you're not going to offer boundaries. Right? You're going to have boundaries and structure for them, but it's done in a sense that's compassionate. And so these are all different ways that you can show up for them that is going to be different from how their other parent's going to show up for them. And by doing this, you are disproving that false narrative. So whatever their other parent is telling them about you, you are showing them, actually, that's not who I am. That's not actually who I am. And so those are some of the key things that you can, you know, you can do is doing it by showing as opposed to just saying.
So you brought up the word boundaries there. So how do you, you know, work and explain to kids about coercive control? How can a parent do it? And how do you discuss boundaries with them? Because this is a lot when you even discuss relationships where boundaries might start to be pushed, but you don't see it as being boundaries pushed until it becomes way more obvious. So how do you start explaining to kids about coercive control boundaries? What are boundaries? How do you know if they're being pushed? And then something we also once discussed in a previous call that we had with each other, which is intuition. And you thought that was very important, that a child needs to listen to their intuition. But how does one listen to their intuition? How can a parent help with that? I know that was a lot of questions right there. So do your best.
Yeah. So I get to talk to kids a completely different way than you will get to if you are dealing with the family court system, right? Because my role is different And I am not going to be threatened. Well, I do get threatened sometimes by the abusive parents of my kids, but it's different, right? So I'm not going to get thrown under the bus in family court for, I'm going to use the term parental alienation, or that I'm, you know, gatekeeping and these other things, because I'm the therapist. So I get to more directly teach them what's going on. I don't, you know, I'm not going to be like, well, your dad is a narcissist and you're experiencing coercive control. I don't say anything like that. But in the therapy room, I get to say, wow, it felt really good when this parent said these things to you. You know, it seems like your whole body language changed when you were talking about this other parent. So I'm going to help them listen to their insides and their intuition of, I feel this way here, I feel that way there. And just bring that awareness to them. So I get to do a lot of that. We talk about boundaries all the time because unfortunately our kids have boundaries left and right. They have very little control in their world, right? Like they go to school, they follow school rules. They don't get to choose what they eat typically. They don't get to choose their bedtime. They don't get to do a whole lot of things. And so they actually are pretty aware of these. That's not what they don't think of them as boundaries. They think of them as rules. But we do talk about like our uh-oh feelings. And so you can use whatever language you want. I work with kids as young as three, so I use some young language sometimes. But, you know, that uh-oh feeling where our insides are telling us something's wrong. And so then we'll talk about what does that feel like? Like, what is that? Like, I feel it in my tummy, and I feel like I need to look around, like something's wrong. And so I'll kind of narrate what happens when you have that feeling in your gut that you're like, yeah, something's not right. And so it's really helping bring that awareness to our kids. And so for you as parents, it is okay to state something or notice something that they're telling you. So maybe they're telling you something horrible happened at their other parent's house, as opposed to trying to get more information and like pepper them with questions, because that doesn't feel good to them. Even if you're dying to know, that doesn't feel good to your kids. It is, gosh, that seems really hard. I wish that didn't have to happen to you. Is there any way you think I could help solve this problem? So things like that within the parenting realm. And I feel like there was another question I was supposed to answer that I didn't.
Well, the questions that I had here were just, you know, how do you explain to kids about coercive control as a whole?
Yeah. So you as the parent aren't going to get to probably explain that to them. If you are still involved in litigation with your ex-partner, and that is to protect you. So if that is the case, I would get a child therapist so that they can have a little bit more direct explanations. But sometimes we talk about like when you get that uh-oh feeling, or when you think like, hey, sometimes it feels like when I'm with, you know, I'll make up kind of a story. When I'm with these people, I feel like I have to tell them they're right all the time. And I know I can't ask them good questions, and I just have to agree all the time, even though I don't agree on the inside, but I agree. And so I'll give some examples. And so even as a parent, you could do that of like, gosh, that seems so hard when you had to say yes, but you couldn't say yes because you didn't feel like you should. Because that is, you're not throwing anyone under the bus. You're talking about the child's experience. We do talk pretty directly in the office with my kids. If they have witnessed abuse, physical abuse, we talk about it directly. We have to process those things. We do process a lot of the coercive control type things that bother them. And it is more those things of like, well, I know I can't tell my mom, or I know I can't tell my dad something that happened at school, or I know I can't tell my dad that I love my mom more and I want to live with my mom. And so we'll process that, because they will get in trouble if they, and so we'll kind of more directly talk about that in therapy, but that is really difficult to do if you're still in litigation because you can get in trouble for it.
So I guess from what I'm hearing, a big part of your role when abuse happens is really helping the child understand, you know, what they are experiencing throughout this whole entire situation.
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, I guess what are like the first things you kind of do with a child that is part of that process?
Yeah. So it's going to be a similar or hopefully parallel process about what you all get to do and what I've spoken to. So if you have a therapist, I hope you have a good one. The first thing that you need to do is build trust. And that's not on your plate. That's not on your shoulders or the child's shoulders. That's on my shoulders as the therapist, is that it's my job to create a space that feels safe and is trustworthy. And survivors of abuse, they do not have trust for people because they've been told this is the way things are. And then they've been told they have to doubt them, right? Like everything that they know is wrong through like gaslighting and minimizing and things like that. And the person that they thought was their soulmate is causing horrific harm. And so they no longer trust people on the outside. They don't trust themselves. And so really, and our kids are in the same boat. So especially if your kids have reported what's going on, they've shared the secret and nothing happened. No one did anything to keep them safe. They're not going to trust me. Like, why would they tell me this stuff? Because they tell people and nobody does anything. So similarly, I really focus on attunement. I focus on learning my children, like learning what is my kid about? What is this kiddo in the office about? Maybe they like Minecraft. Maybe they love some Pokemon. Maybe they are really athletic and they do. With one of my clients, I did handstands back and forth together for 10 minutes as we talked. So really learning who the child is and giving them that unconditional positive regard that they don't get in trouble with me for saying what's going on in their world, that there's no real secrets in the sense that they can't share with me. But there's that also piece I really lay out. My role as a therapist is, and what confidentiality looks like for them, because they're still kids. So there is a limit to confidentiality for them. But in these cases, which these are the ones I specialize in, I hold a lot of the information close to my chest and I don't share with parents. I share very little with parents, which I know is scary for the parents. I'm a mama. I kind of want to know what's going on with my kid, but it really is to protect them. So that they can tell me the really hard things and they can tell me the things that I might have to report to child protection or that I might have to testify to in court if I'm subpoenaed. And so we do it in a way that they know that I'm going to have integrity and do what I say I'm going to do. So if I say I'm going to keep something just between us because it doesn't reach safety standards for me to report, I don't tell anybody. Even as small as if I tell them that I will have balloons at our next session because we ran out of balloons to make stress balls, you better believe the next week they come, I will have balloons because that shows them I'll do what I say I'm going to do. And that's what builds trust.
So when we're talking about abuse, coercive control, domestic violence, you know, we're talking a lot of the times in the aftermath, the people that are listening to the show, sometimes they're in the relationships, but a lot of the time they're in the aftermath of everything. And for the newly single parents, you know, a lot of them don't have a support system. So how can they create a support system if they are a single parent?
Yes, this is one of the most important things you can do for yourself. When I was talking about taking care of yourself, creating a safe inner circle of support for you is so important. And there's different roles within that. So if you think of like the Target logo, right? It's like concentric circles. So there's like a really small circle on the inside, and then a bigger circle, and then a bigger circle, and a bigger circle. So the people in your inner circle are the people that get what you've experienced, or they're really trying to understand what you've experienced. So these are the people that you can call. So it might be a family member. It might not be a family member. Not all families are healthy. It might be that your therapist might be in your inner circle of support. It might be your faith leader if you go to a house of worship of whatever kind. It might be an advocate. It could be a friend. But these are the people that you can share all the stuff with, and you do not feel like you have to defend yourself every minute, because that's what you have to do all the time, everywhere. People don't understand what coercive control is, what it looks like, especially if your use of the term domestic violence. People in our world is like, domestic violence is getting punched in the face. They don't know the insidiousness of all of those other non-physical forms of violence. So first is really finding, and it might be one person that's in your inner circle at first. And then as you, you know, start to do other things, the people in the further out circles, they may not even get to know about your experience completely, because they may not understand. But it's okay to meet people that are at a book club, at your library, that are at a mommy and me yoga class, that are at a rec center, that maybe you just see them with their stroller every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at the park because y'all are doing your mom walks with your kids. It is okay to start meeting other people and not share your whole story, because we don't know if they're trustworthy yet. And so that's a boundary for you as you're kind of creating your network, is kind of assessing, dipping your toe in the water. Is this person someone I want in that inner circle? Or do I want to keep them a couple circles out because they're not going to totally get it? Finding a hobby is really helpful for so many reasons, because likely you don't remember what you enjoyed, right? Your autonomy, your identity has been stripped from you. And so you don't even know what you like on your pizza, right? So what hobbies do you like? And so finding something that you enjoy that has nothing to do with family court and abuse and advocacy and reading, like going down the rabbit hole of reading everything you can about abuse, because what a hobby or something like that will do, like a book club, is going to help start to grow new neural networks, new neurons in your brain that are not those fight or flight ones. These are different ones where they're all about connection with other people. So those are, it is hard, especially as a single parent, like, wow, I have no childcare. How am I going to, I can't just like go out with the ladies all the time. So sometimes it is finding those things you can do with your kids, hanging out after school on the playground and meeting a parent that's hanging out too. Sometimes it's just those smaller moments of connection that can lead to bigger connections.
And when it comes to calming your child, when dysregulation is happening, not just while it's happening, but as a whole in creating like a calm environment for your child, what are kind of some ways that people might not think of that are ways to kind of have your child think that I live in a calm environment, or if certain things happen, you know, what are little tips that you can do to calm your child down?
Yeah. So it's about bringing back safety, like elements of safety for them. And these aren't things you might think or have anything to do with safety, but anything that is revolving around connection with you will improve their sense of safety. So if your child, like mine, are into Pokemon, dear Lord, I'm learning all about Pokemon. You spending 10 minutes listening to your child, watching them go through their binder and move their cards around, just sitting with, where you're doing nothing that it doesn't seem important at all, zero. Right? Like we're moving cards in the binder. But what that's doing is it's building connection over that protection. So connection is kind of the opposite of the protection stuff that you're, you know, their brains have already grown. And so they feel that safety. They will start to calm if you are doing child-centered stuff with them, because you're focusing on who is my child. My child is okay. I love to be with my child doing what they want to do. Am I excited? Do I want to do my own Pokemon collection? I do not. Not at all. Like, no interest. But my boys love it. And so those small 5-10 minutes of connection where you are just focused on what they are interested in. Maybe you're watching a YouTube video of Pokemon on the screen. Maybe they love to color. Maybe they love to do these different things. Those are really helpful to give your child just a glimpse of safety. Some other things are having sensory items available for them. So this, you don't have to go out and buy a bunch of stuff. You can go to the dollar store, you can buy balloons, and you can put flour into a balloon. Tie that up, and it is a great stress ball. Double, like wrap that, do two balloons, because otherwise if it pops, it's a big disaster. But playing with that, buying a thing of shaving cream at the dollar store and letting them play in shaving cream. It sounds crazy and like weird, but some kids really need those sensory experiences to regulate their nervous system.
How about meals?
Yes. So food is actually important. So when like you're going about your day, you're super busy and you're like, gosh, I'm so irritable. And you're like, wow, I'm hangry right now. We need to check in on that with our kids too. Are our kids hungry? Do our kids thirsty? Which is a really good sensory piece too, is like either cold, like something really cold to drink or really warm to drink. Those are also ways. But yes, checking those, like, is my kid tired, hungry, thirsty? Those are so important, because if those needs aren't met, you're going to have an agitated, obnoxious child. Right? I'm agitated and obnoxious when I'm hungry. So yes, having those are really important. And kind of knowing what foods kind of calm them down and soothe. Very often, foods with protein in it are actually really helpful to regulating mood. So just having some different things. My children, of course, are the ones that like don't like anything with protein in it. So that's so fun and awesome. So it's harder to get that. For them, but foods that make their bodies feel good is also helpful.
And before we end off our talk today, tell everyone what you've been doing and where they can reach you and access your services.
Yes. Yeah, so if you live in Colorado, you can use our therapy services. And that's Arvada Therapy Solutions. That's solely for people in Colorado, because that is my my license prevents me from working with people outside of the state in a therapeutic capacity, which is one reason why I started Rising Beyond Power and Control. Most people know it as the Rising Beyond Community, which is a membership community for survivors who are dealing with post-separation abuse, family court, all of those fun things. Just a place to connect with other parents doing it. And so that is at risingbeyondpc.com. On that website, you can find my podcast, which is the Rising Beyond Podcast. There's tons of different resources and books and different opportunities on there as well.
Well, Sybil Cumin, I really want to thank you for being here with us today, sharing all of your experience with everyone. And I really can't thank you enough for being here with us. Everything I'm going to put in the show notes for everyone to reach out to you. Just a really big thank you for being here with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. There needs to be so much support for this audience and this group. And so I just hope that, you know, you're doing your piece. I hope I'm doing my piece and we can support survivors as much as we can.
Well, thank you, Sybil, for being a guest on our show today. And if you want to be a guest on our Survivor Story episode, please do go to our website at narcissistapocalypse.com. Top of the page, there's a button that says guest form. When you click on that button, it takes you to our guest form page, and there you can read all of our instructions and either send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com or fill out our guest form and press the submit button, and please do send it in the format that we ask for. And if you are someone that needs support, we have a support group at NarcissistApocalypse.com. Go to our webpage at NarcissistApocalypse.com. Top of the page, you'll see that we have a support group button. Press it, and you'll see that we have our very own safe social network. And inside, you'll see that we have Zoom meetings every Wednesday night, Thursday afternoons, and Saturday nights. We have forum boards for you to post on to get the validation that you need from survivors just like you. It is a wonderful group of people on there. So if you need support, join our support group today. And if you need even more support, please do visit our friends at domesticshelters.org. At domesticshelters.org, they have articles and resources to help you make sense of what you're dealing with. They have every phone number, web address, email address for shelters and agencies, no matter how big or small the town you're in, the town you're from. Domesticshelters.org has it there. So if you need help from them, just go to domesticshelters.org. And we have another friend of the show called Shelter Movers, and they can be found at sheltermovers.com. And Shelter Movers helps people who are getting out of coercive control and domestic violence. They get all of your stuff out of your home and into storage. That includes your pets and livestock, too. It is a donor-supported charitable organization only available in Canada right now. So if you want to use them, get help from them, or you just want to donate to them, go to sheltermovers.com. And that is it for today's episode. So for myself and Sybil Cumin, we hope you have a good night.